Welcome to Business Game Changers, where you'll hear expert tips on the big issues and the hottest trends to level up your business game. If you're building a career or building a business, this is must-hear radio. Here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. There are over 500,000 job openings right now for Scrum and Agile experts on just one job board, Simply Hired. That doesn't count all the other job openings. This is something that people really should be looking at. What is Scrum and Agile? Well, today we have Dr. Jeff Sutherland, who is the co-founder of this business framework, and he'll explain what it is, and he also gives us insight into why the business world just loves to hire people with this experience. We also will be discussing his best-selling book, Scrum, The Art of Doing Twice the Work in Half the Time. But before we get into that, we are going to play a little excerpt from my interview with Jeffrey James, who is an award-winning author and blogger for Inc.com. He's also an award-winning author of over 7 books, but his current business blog on Inc. has won 2 prestigious journalism awards, and it regularly receives over 1 million page views a month. So for now, I am going to play my excerpt from Jeffrey James.
Well, I think it's true that the main direction of the publication is towards entrepreneurs, but I believe that entrepreneurs exist everywhere, even inside large organizations, just as I think that people, corporate bureaucrats, can turn up inside small companies. It's really a spirit of how you think about your job and about your career rather than the size of the company that you're in. And in that way, I think that Inc. magazine and Inc.com serves a very wide and varied audience.
Tune in next week for the full interview with Jeffrey James. Now we're going to move into the world of Agile and Scrum and talk with Jeff Sutherland.
Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about this great book that you have put out. It's called Scrum, The Art of Doing Twice the Work in Half the Time. And you are one of the creators of Scrum. I don't want to say scum. Scrum. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, it derives from my background as both a fighter pilot in the Air Force and as a medical school professor doing research on complex adaptive systems. I came out of those two careers, hired into the banking industry, and I noticed that the way they were running projects was fundamentally flawed. The projects tended to always be late, the customers were always upset, the management was always putting pressure on developers. And so I took, I told the CEO of the bank that, I could fix this for him by using what I learned as a fighter pilot and my research at the University of Colorado Medical School. And if he gave me the worst business unit in the bank, I'd show him how to clean it up. And this was all the way back in 1983. And in less than 6 months, that business unit became the most profitable business unit in the bank.
So you were a maverick and it worked.
Absolutely. To me, you know, as a medical school professor and watching what the bankers were doing, I found it absolutely incredible. They were managing these huge projects with these big Gantt charts that could fill a wall, and they had all the tasks and all the dates and the names on the tasks. And if anybody missed a single date, the whole schedule would just slide to the right. And it reminded me of training new fighter pilots trying to land an airplane. You know, they always would come in high, and if they were high and they tried to land, they'd be halfway down the runway. They could go sliding off the end of the runway. So when I took over that business unit, I said, folks, I'm going to show you how to land a project, and we're going to prioritize stuff at the beginning of every week by business value, and on Friday we're going to deploy it. And we're going to do that every week until you guys can get it right. And so it is a radically, totally different way of running projects.
And this was more geared for software, right? Is it a software? Now, I'm not saying Scrum in general is, because we're going to talk about that later based on your book, but when you started, it was really focused on software, or is that not correct?
Well, it's all about complex adaptive systems, and any business is a complex adaptive system. A person is a complex adaptive system. So I applied the approach because I happened to be in a bank building software, but I applied it to sales, marketing, support. I took the entire business unit, everyone. And
okay.
We all in the same way. So it applies universally to everything.
Well, I looked at some studies, and according to a recent study, it shows that over 80% of businesses and organizations are using Agile or Scrum for their projects, which is pretty remarkable. It claims that 73% of those businesses claim that it provided faster time to complete their projects. And go ahead.
We started this in 1983, and then over the next five companies, I continued in software companies, and I tuned it up. And by 1993, we had it in the form that it is today. And I brought in all the experience from companies that have been looked at by two very well-known Japanese business school professors. One of them is back at the Harvard Business School, Professor Takeuchi. And they've gone all over the world and looked at the best teams, mainly in hardware companies, not software at all. And they found that in companies like Honda, Canon, 3M in the United States, later in Toyota, that these small cross-functional teams, which we were already using in the model I was working with, could deliver significantly faster. So I was working with a leading productivity guru in the United States, Capers Jones. He had a company called Software Productivity Research. So we took his tooling, and we began to benchmark the Scrum implementation. And when we got it running 10 times as fast as a traditional project, we said, it's ready for prime time. And when we deployed it, we guaranteed our customers that they would double production in the first month of use, or they got their money back from the tooling we were selling them.
Well, you figured out how to sell a development process to the business people, essentially, to the leaders of the companies. You need to be smart.
We sold tools for software development, but to use those tools, you needed a software development process that was fitted to the tools.
And is Scrum, before we go farther, what is the difference between Agile and Scrum?
Well, Agile, you know, in 1993 we started Scrum, and in 1995 Kent Beck was talking to me. He was starting a process called extreme programming. We were using all those techniques in the first Scrum. And around that same time, I got together with Ken Schwaber and said, Ken, you know, you're a CEO of a project management software company. Let's formalize this and start selling it to the industry. Meanwhile, Kent Beck is forming extreme programming. In 2001, we got together with the extreme programming guys and the Scrum guys, along with 10 or 11 other business consultants and authors, and we debated what we would call what we were doing, and we decided to call it Agile. And we came up with a set of values that we said were Agile values. Number one, that software is built around great teams. Number two, that you needed to have working software at short intervals. Number three, you had to have the customer involved in the product creation. And number four, your plan had to be adaptive and constantly responding to change. And that was written up as the Agile Manifesto, and the world has adopted it. Now, if you're going to implement it, you're going to implement Scrum or extreme programming or some other thing that people have come up with, because now everybody has to be Agile. So to sell anything, you have to call it Agile. So there's a lot of
stuff out
there.
Well, you do. You have to say it's Agile. How often do you see them saying it's Agile, but it's not?
Well, the data, Ken Schwaber and I published a book called Software in 30 Days a couple of years ago, and the Standish Group provided data on their 50,000 projects in their database worldwide. It showed that 49% of Agile projects couldn't deliver software reliably on time, and about 80% of them failed to deliver at all. So over half of what people call Agile out there, all you could say about it is that it's really bad Agile.
They don't understand how to do this stuff. So
yeah.
Well, and I think that's the struggle,
hand, the data
right?
Showed, on the other hand, the data showed that success rate of Agile was 3 times the success rate of traditional project management. So even bad Agile was better than the way they were doing it.
Well, yeah, my stats here say that 86% of all projects fail, but when you're using Scrum or Agile, 51% of the projects succeed. So right there, that's a huge difference. And then it goes further in the study showing that the reasons those particular projects failed, the majority of the reason was because of the lack of Agile knowledge or pushback on accepting the methodology. So I would assume that there's a lot of people that just don't want to adopt it.
Yeah, what Yahoo rolled it out to hundreds of teams, and they carefully surveyed, and this is published in the IEEE Digital Library, after they rolled it out to 150 teams, 86% of people really loved it, and 14% of them didn't like it. So the Human Resources Group did an analysis of those 14%, and they found that those 14%, they hated the cafeteria, they hated Yahoo management, they hated their work in general, and they hated Scrum. So
so they just were miserable people.
It didn't really have to do with Scrum. Some people just don't like
change.
The change, and yeah. They don't like anything in particular.
So does Scrum dictate any software architectural model? Like, modeling of the data or, you know, how you use the physical architecture or any of that stuff?
Oh, it specifically does not dictate specifics. However, it has strategies for evolving the architecture, which are recommended, and recommendations to move away from a central Ivy Tower group of architects, which tend to slow things down, and put the architects on the team coding with the people, and have them working together with the teams evolving the architecture.
Yeah, that makes sense. Instead of designing it and throwing it over the wall and saying, here you go.
Right. Well,
and
exactly.
It doesn't even work. You're missing half my stuff.
Yeah.
And then you got to put, well, I remember I worked in the day, and then you have to put, I've done a lot of system design and development. And then these business people have to put their request in for a data element to be added to the database in order to write your application. And it was a nightmare.
Yeah, absolutely.
Until we fixed it.
We've gotten away from that, you know. We like what are called user stories. The business people say, you know, I want to do this. I want this feature so that I can get this benefit, make more money. And it's up to the developers to figure out what to do with the database.
Well, and it seems like this is a business-focused. What was lacking before, back, you know, in the 90s, was more of a business-focused project management to the engineering process. Whereas before it was all engineering driven and people were fighting over technology concepts and all this stuff. And it just, you really needed to get that business group incorporated into this process in order for it to work.
Exactly. And that's the third Agile value, is involving the customer in the product creation. So that means the description of what you're creating has to be in the customer's language. And it's up to the developers to translate that into whatever they're doing. But at the end of the day, they meet the customer's needs. The whole focus is delighting the customer.
And the customer can be, you know, the business unit that it's serving, or right?
Yeah, business unit inside a company. It could be a third party. It could be the iPhone user.
Sure. Yeah.
Could be anyone.
So when you use Scrum, can you do it on new development as well as taking off-the-shelf software and making that work?
Absolutely. I mean, we were – the whole strategy with Scrum from the beginning was to create a piece of software and grow it like a plant. So the concept was all development is maintenance and growing of something that's already there. So with new development, we'd create a small prototype in a week, and then we'd start iterating on it. So it doesn't matter whether it's old software or new software, the process can be applied everywhere.
Yeah, it's a business process for being smart. So, you know, when people are looking for jobs and stuff, they put Agile on their resume, and or they put Scrum. And what, you know, the human resources and the you know, people who are hiring, they just, the headhunters and these placement firms, they weed you out based on having those two keywords there. But in reality, it's, you know as well as I do, just because you have a word there doesn't mean that they're good at it. And even if you don't have the word there, it doesn't mean they're bad at it. What kind of characteristics should people be looking for when they're hiring somebody that's capable of doing a really good job in this kind of environment?
Well, first of all, most of them will have some kind of certification, like the Scrum Alliance, Scrum.org. Other two leading, at least if they have that, you know that they've heard the right thing. Whether they can implement it, you know, that depends on, you know, whether they have experience in implementing it, which you need to find out. But as far as putting it on your resume, it's a really good idea, because right now there are 400,000 Scrum jobs open. If you go to simplyhired.com, you'll see 400,000 Scrum jobs. And I just looked at the other day, Oracle has 9,000 Scrum job openings.
Well, since they have so many job openings, and obviously they're not all trained, and they can get training from you or from other organizations, right? They can't just go and get some Scrum person if they don't have the training, and if there's 9,000 jobs openings, there aren't enough people out there with the training. So who should they be looking for? What kind of characteristics?
Well, it depends on what level you're hiring. You know, I work with a venture capital company, and we're often hiring fairly senior people, you know, VPs of engineering for expansion stage startups. And for those, I say you need to find a guy that has implemented Agile, probably both in a big company and a small company, and can demonstrate that he has successfully deployed it. Otherwise, you have no idea what you're getting. If you're hiring a programmer, you really want to know that person has been on a Scrum team and been successful, ideally in more than one company, if you can get it.
But since people aren't getting it now and there's so many job openings, what do people do?
Well, what I recommend people who want to get into the area, I mean, there's a lot of good people out there that just don't know Scrum, is to come to one of my courses, get the basics, and then get out there and get on a Scrum team and get some experience. And because there are so many job openings, it's fairly easy to do that.
Go ahead.
Part of the requirement is a person being open to change, open to new ideas, want to try it. So, you know, you can tell a lot just by talking to people about how they feel about work, what they've done. And if they have the basic training and they have a positive attitude toward jumping on a Scrum team, there are some companies where one of our local CEOs said what he does is he hires a person and he gives them 6 weeks to be a multiplier of team production. They're on probation for 6 weeks, and they've got to more than add their piece to production. They have to multiply the team's production. And if they do, they stay at the company. And if they don't, they move on. So, you know, people try different strategies to deal with a hiring problem.
If people are trying to implement the Agile process, can they get bogged down in the details like they can in other processes and it just becomes a...
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of Scrum out there where people have, you know, studied the rules and are implementing by rote. And the problem is Scrum is like the tango. I mean, you can know all the rules of the tango, but as soon as you get on the dance floor for the first time, it's a mess.
Yeah, you can't learn how to play hockey by reading a book.
Exactly. So that's the problem with any agile practice. It's a movement. It's not an intellectual exercise. So you do need the practical experience. You need to get out there and do it.
Well, you have, your book has a lot of really good information in it, and you talk it. You talk at a more of a higher level. It's not a developer's tool, but it's more of a concept so you understand what this is all about. And your chapter three, the chapters on teams, can you tell us a little bit about what your team concept is?
Well, you know, first of all, the book, as we interviewed with publishers on the book, we worked with all the major publishers, particularly in New York City, and they wanted a book that the average person could understand. They said, you know, Jeff, you need to really downplay the software piece of it and get to the fundamental principles. And with respect to the team, there's one fundamental principle, for starters, that the multiplier effect of a team is huge compared to an individual. So, for example, in the software case, we know that the best programmer is about 10 times as effective as the worst programmer in a typical company.
Well, isn't that more because they are clear in thought and they just can go in there and get it done right away, and somebody can take a week to do the same thing they could do in an hour?
That's right. But the best team is 2,000 times better than the worst team.
Yeah.
In a large company. So the team effect is,
well, maybe
two
even
orders of magnitude.
Maybe even better than 2,000 times, right?
Yeah. So you want to focus on the team. Second, we know, and there's was plenty of stuff published for many, many years before Scrum, showing that unless a team is small, you have significant delays. For example, a study of over 500 projects showed that if a team was six people and they could complete the project in a year, if you added four people and made it 10, it would delay the project for 6 months.
Yeah, that's remarkable.
So, you know, so you never want to have a team of 10, but if you go into the typical company, you find teams of 10, 15, 20, 30, I mean,
50
people are doing crazy things. They just don't comprehend the basic dynamics of the team.
So what do you do, though? Because you go into these organizations that, you know, are 25,000 people or 50,000 people, and I realize the specific organization might be more like 2,000 people, but how do you go about saying, okay, let's chunk this up. How do you do that? How do they get the concept?
It's all about, well, one of the things that's made Scrum so successful is that it scales. What we do is we take small teams, ideally, four or five or six people is the right size, and then we can put multiple teams together, four or five or six teams together, and have them form a virtual team that delivers a product, and we can take that team and then put that together with a bunch of others, and you get this mashup effect. The whole internet is run like this. I mean,
yes.
Nobody's in charge of the internet, right?
So basically you're saying if it's a huge application, like the banking world or telecommunications can be extremely large, you chunk up the projects, they each work on there in a small team, and then those teams come together. It's like a hierarchy of teams.
Exactly. It's more of a network than a hierarchy, but the pieces all need to plug in together. And Scrum has a mechanism for enabling that effect.
Okay. That makes sense. Well, some of the other chapters you have, we have a lot of good stuff. You have a section on time. The measurement of production, not hours?
Yeah. One of the things that people have tended to do is measure work in hours. You know, people fill out timesheets. And if you go and ask people how they feel about filling out timesheets, they're never very happy about it.
Yeah.
Not only that, they have trouble figuring out where to allocate their time. Their whole focus is to billing you more time, whether you're a customer or an employer, you know, they have to bill more hours. There's nothing in there about production.
Exactly.
You know, they could do work less time and deliver you twice as much work you should pay them more, right? You're getting twice as much.
Well, and so, it's important to look at all business aspects. You want to look at production, not worry about time, unless right. time is too long.
Yeah. So you really want to measure, you know, in the software world, you want to measure some unit of features. How fast does a team deliver features? And you want to measure that in short intervals. We call sprints in Scrum. And you want to see that go up.
Do you have
you want hours per feature going down. You want less hours and more features. That's the focus.
Do you have a reward system that you put in place for accomplishing goals, or is it does the Scrum Agile process have a reward system?
Well, one of the things that the best teams in the world that Takeuchi and Tanaka observed, they all had three characteristics in common. Number one, they had transcendent goals. Like the Prius team's goal was to green the planet by doubling the gas mileage of the car. And the second principle is that autonomy, they had to figure that out for themselves. They figured out what work they would do. They chose their work. They decided how to do the work. Nobody's telling them how to do minute by minute. The management's giving them challenging, transcendent goals. And third, by working together, they learn together how to master their craft. And so these three things are the key to motivation.
So they develop mentally together so that they have tactile understanding of what's going on.
Right.
And then they take responsibility for their own happiness.
Right. In fact, there's a chapter on happiness in the book. That's maybe a whole other topic. But just to stay on this, the incentives in an agile company, you really want to de-emphasize individual bonuses and performance appraisals. For example, Google has no performance appraisals because they're shown to demotivate employees.
Yeah, people want to move towards something. I taught a business class at the University of Minnesota this year, and we talked a lot about motivation and what motivates people. And people want to be inspired. They want to be doing something that they inspires them.
Right. And at the same time, they do want to benefit from their work. So like in my company this year, interestingly enough, the team matured enough so that we had a revenue sharing structure within the company, and it was originally based on percentage of salary. So the people that got the most salary would get the most bonus. Okay, that's kind of a traditional approach. This year, the team, and it had to be with the consent of the people, you know, with the higher salaries, said it's all for one and one for all. Everybody gets the same piece of the revenue share, whether they're a secretary or a practice manager.
Now, do you find pushback from the real competitive business types that can't necessarily be in those environments?
The competitive people in our company had to agree to this. In fact, as we did a retrospective on the year, listening to the people, the people, you know, the leaders of the company that were making a lot of the money, they said the revenue share needs to be equal, and we need to incent the people that are making a lot of the money in a different way. And so we're experimenting with that this year, so that, you know, once a person generates enough money to pay all their salary and benefits, plus a certain percentage that they give back to the company that pays for the company over and goes to the employees pool, then they get a share of anything beyond that. So
figured out. You have that all. Tracked.
Yeah, so we have allowed the rainmaker. This is I call this the rainmaker problem.
Yeah.
The rainmakers have to be able to make enough rain that everybody benefits, and if they do really make a lot, then they get a big chunk of it as well. And
well, because then the rainmakers will get really motivated.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because that's what motivates them.
Right. So, but at the same time, we've set it up so that the bonus pool is shared alike with everyone.
Sure.
So I think it's a really interesting model that we're experimenting with this year. I'll let you know how it turns out.
Yeah, I'd really like to hear how that goes, because that's interesting, because it's a big question with people, and different people are motivated different ways, so I'd really like to see how that works.
Right.
Well, you have another section called Removing Waste, which is such a problem in our business world, right? Waste. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, a lot of the companies that Takeuchi Tanaka were looking at were lean companies. And so as we started to incorporate their thinking into Scrum, we started to adopt all the lean tooling to try to look at what's going on. And one of the pieces of lean has to do with what they call process efficiency. And if you analyze process efficiency in a company, you'll find out that there's more than 85% waste in anything anybody's doing. It's mind-boggling. So,
yeah, that's a huge number. I mean, if you can figure out how to get rid of a significant portion of your waste, you are golden.
Absolutely. So we use all this tooling that the lean guys have worked on for decades to identify the waste, and then we use Scrum to remove it. Because Scrum runs in short cycles. Every cycle we want process improvement, and that process improvement is usually targeted at removing waste.
So is that kind of where the Scrum name comes out? You like Scrum it out?
Yeah, well, Scrum comes from rugby, okay? Because when Takeuchi and Tanaka looked at teams at Honda and Toyota and places like that, they were working so closely together, it reminded them of rugby teams. And so they said, we're going to call this Scrum Project Management, because Scrum is the formation in rugby where the ball gets put into play.
Oh.
So that's where the word Scrum comes from. It's a rugby term.
I'm not really up on rugby, so I didn't connect that. You got to use a, you know, soccer or hockey term, and then I'll, or something else.
Yeah.
No, that's a good, I'm just being silly. Okay. So planning, another part, you talked about planning, but you really focused on reality-based planning. How do you do that? How do you even know what reality is?
Well, you know, back in the 1940s, the RAND Corporation was hired by the Department of Defense to figure out how do we plan difficult technical projects. And the first thing they discovered is that hours are a really bad way to do estimation. The error rate is really high. The experts have widely different opinions. And they recommended that they go to a relative size estimation. So we do everything by relative sizing, like small, medium, and large t-shirt is a relative sizing. We find that we get much more accurate estimates, and we can estimate big things, little things, and the agile way is to estimate only in fine detail for things that are coming up right away, and for things that are further out to estimate them in bigger chunks. And then as we start to work the project, we look at the velocity of production. So, you know, within the first 1 or 2 weeks, we have a number that shows, you know, how fast are we going and what will the date probably be if we continue at this pace. And we're constantly checking that against the real pace of the team and trying to improve the team every step of the way.
And that helps manage the management, right? I mean, if you can constantly...
Exactly. So we do make a plan, but we have a much faster and more accurate planning, but we examine the plan and update it every week or two. We never assume that it's going to work, whereas the traditional projects, that they'll make a plan for a year, and for a year everybody's assuming that it's going to work, like Obamacare, okay? 4 years, $500 million. Everybody's assuming that's going to work, but there's no way to test it until they turn it on.
Yeah.
And when they do, nothing works.
Well, nothing, yeah.
So that's the waterfall way. The agile fix to Obamacare was to bring in a team of agile guys, and they said, okay, we're going to prioritize a backlog, And today we're going to work on somebody's going to be able to log on and get some health care insurance today. Who is that? We're going to write something that makes that happen day by day, multiple times a day. And in 6 weeks, they signed up 7 million people.
Well, isn't that like solving any goal that you had, breaking a goal down to sizable chunks so that you can get something accomplished? Because if you just try to take on the whole goal at once, likely you're not going to succeed. But if you,
exactly.
And so it's taking some of those basic management principles and applying it to project development.
Exactly.
So you also talk about keeping your priorities straight. And I think that's a really important business concept when you're trying to develop products and everything else. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about this last week. You know, you go into the average company, they have like 100, 200, 300 projects. They're all number one priority. And they have people working on multiple projects at once. Well, all you have to do is go and pick up a standard reference text in the software world. One of them is Jerry Weinberg's book on software quality. And he shows you if a team is working on four projects at once, they will lose 70% of their production from context switching.
From just not having a focus.
Yeah, not being focused. They're constantly switching, going from this to that and getting confused and delayed. And for some reason, the average manager has never read the book. So what you need to do is you need to decide what order you're going to get things done, and you need to focus at the top of the list and try to knock them off one by one, doing as few as possible in order to go fast down the list.
Because even if you have things, 10 things that are technically the same priority and super high priority, it's not going to help you to work on all 10 at once anyways.
Work on all 10 at once, you'll lose 90% of your production by switching.
So it just doesn't make sense. So just, you're going to get 10 down faster if you do it in order and focus than to do it all at once.
If they're all equal priority, just pick one and do that first, and then do the next one.
And then put up with the heat while you're getting your butt kicked over the fact that you don't have number 10 done.
So, you know, we have this example we show in the training that if you have three customers, you tell them all, you know, their project's going to be done in 6 months because you work on them all at the same time. If you give them an order, you can get them all done in about 3 months.
Yeah.
But the problem is you have to work on one at a time. So how do you deal with the customer that's waiting a month?
Yeah, they're mad at you because they're not the top priority.
So it is a customer management problem. But on the other hand, from a management point of view, you've got to figure out how to manage the customer. Otherwise, it's going to take you twice as long to do anything.
Well, yeah, you're going to have that problem anyways, right? So
right. You
just have to figure it out. So can you talk a little bit about some of the examples where Scrum has been successful?
The ones that I like the best are I'm going to be talking about one tomorrow that was at Medco. Medco was at the time that we started working with them, was a $55 billion company selling prescriptions by mail order and using robotic factories.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And the CEO had said to Wall Street, you know, we're number one in this business, and we're going to stay number one by being able to take any different type of patient, like a diabetic, and send their meds to a special pharmacy. And we're going to call them up and talk to them. We're going to tune their meds for low cost and improved healthcare outcome. And we're going to do that for every category of disease. And in order to do that, we're going to have to completely rewire our IT infrastructure. We have 5,000 IT people. and he said, this is going to be live in a year. And then, of course, when the traditional project planners planned it, the plan immediately showed that it was going to be at least a year late. And the last time they did something like this, they were 2 or 3 years later than the plan. So they called us in. So, you know, I to make a long story short, by simply applying the Scrum principles, we actually pulled that project in by a year. We got it done in 6 months where the plan said it was going to be a year and a half out. And the stock price for Medco doubled while we were doing it.
That's incredible. That's a great story from a business standpoint.
$55 billion company.
Well, that's incredible. So did you focus on one product line and then go from there, prove it works, get the concept working, and then start implementing other lines or something like that?
Well, you know, we had only about 60 people out of the 5,000 were working on this, redoing the plumbing for this new app. And when we were done, the CIO said, how do I get my other 4,940 people as fired up as the 60 people? And when we explained it to them, they decided that they couldn't do it right away. The company, it was a big change, and it took them about 3 years at working on changing the infrastructure of the company to prepare for Scrum before they could start really rolling it out broadly.
Yeah, because the problem a lot of times is the company structure and the people's social networks more than the actual technology or something that you're trying to implement.
Yeah. In Medco's case, it was all of that, but they did have a lot of big mainframe applications. And in order to position them so that they could work with Scrum, they had to move to a service-oriented architecture where every month they could upgrade the services from the mainframes.
Sure.
That just took a lot of work to get those guys in that mode.
Just to constantly be improving the system is something they just weren't used to. Versus they were doing like huge implementations every year or something versus constant iterations.
And it took both changes in the mindset, but also changes in the way they use the hardware and the architecture of the network and all that kind of stuff had to be altered to be agile.
So do you have other examples that really speaks to the environment?
Another one that was actually much faster, a couple years ago, we did Pegasystems, which is another publicly traded company. They sell software tools that build big applications, like they could run American Express, for example. And their CEO is a brilliant guy, and he decided that they needed to get agile, and that Scrum was the way to do it. And so in about 3 weeks, we trained the product marketing people on how to manage backlog and the teams. And within a month, they had every person in the company doing Scrum. And they pulled, they had an 18-month site release cycle. They pulled that down to 9 months. They cut it in half. While they were doing it, their stock price went up 400%.
Yeah, see, that's incredible because they're removing so much waste and they're getting things done so much quicker, and it's just not a big quagmire of stupidity. It's you're actually getting things accomplished. It directly affects your bottom line.
Right. So that was the case. Very few companies are like that where they can do it all at once and be successful. You need really strong leadership, visionary leadership to do that.
Yeah, I would imagine because I always hear the term engineers are like herding cats. And so you have to have pretty strong leadership to get them all bought in overall. But you must have done some really amazing stuff just getting Scrum out like you have is pretty remarkable. Because I know that I've heard in a different thing, I read something where you said there's still this fighting back and forth on what is the most important. And that's what I'm used to with engineers. And right. I think the fact that you've done such an amazing job of getting this out there in 80% of companies is, I mean, that's just remarkable. That means that there's something that's working.
The great thing about the software business is that it's very competitive. And, you know, if you can't compete, you can disappear very quickly. So it's kind of survival of the fitness. And because Scrum really works, even done badly, you do significantly better with Scrum.
You do better than the, yeah. Because at least they have a focus.
Well, or 500% better. And so, you know, we have companies coming to us now, big companies like Autodesk, they said, hey, you know, it's not enough to do Scrum. All our competition is doing Scrum. We need to do Scrum better. So we've been in there educating the management, the company, retraining everyone, and raising the whole bar. You know, if, again, you know, let's go back to rugby. Some rugby teams lose all their games and some win, okay?
Yeah.
And it's getting to be like rugby out there in the business world.
Well, I consider it like soccer. Back in the mid-90s, soccer was not that much of a possession game. I mean, it was, but not really. And now it's, they used to say that something like a person would spend 6 seconds with the ball, and now it's like 1.5 second. It's become a possession game. And so basically it's much more structured and plays are, it's a much more team-oriented game. And so now they're all going towards some kind of possession style something, and they keep working on iterating it up better. And hockey's doing the same thing, and all these different sports do that. And it's an evolution of becoming really good at something.
Right, exactly. And that's exactly what's going on with Scrum in the business world. It's a sports analogy.
So your last chapter is about moving it on to, I don't know if that's your last chapter or not, but your, I think it is your chapter 9, how to get Scrum beyond software and into other realms of business and life where it can be really useful.
Yeah, you know, one of the inspirations back in the early days of Scrum, I was on the president's advisory committee for Axion, a microenterprise lending institute based on the Grameen Bank in Bangladesh. And they lend money to really poor people. And the way they do it is they get a small group together, 4 or 5 people, and they coach each person to come up with a business plan. And then when everyone's got a business plan, they loan them $25. And then they say, when you pay back your $25, everybody pays back, then we're going to, you know, upgrade all the business plans and we'll loan you another $25. Well, they got amazing results. I mean, women who couldn't feed their children, all of a sudden in a few weeks, they have enough money to feed the kids. A few weeks later, they have enough extra money to buy them clothes. Now they can send them to school for the first time.
Well, they gave them a means to being able to do something. Yeah. About. Yeah, that's a great story. I've heard that story. I didn't realize Scrum was involved with that.
Yeah, well, I came back to the first Scrum team before they were Scrum. I said, you know, you guys are always late. You always have too many bugs, and the management is always unhappy. I said, I have an idea where we could probably deliver so much software so fast, they'd actually let it ask us to slow down. We could take back our power as people.
And, take back our power. Because the systems environments, the tech groups were really got the crap beat out of them.
Right.
That's
I said,
funny.
Do you guys want to live the way you're living for the rest of your life? And they said, no. So, you know, this was one of the inspirations for starting Scrum. And last year, one of our certified Scrum Masters, the Grameen Bank in Bangladesh, is now involved into a foundation. And they're in agriculture, healthcare, education. And the headquarters for agriculture is in Uganda. And one of our certified Scrum Masters went to Uganda to train the Uganda agricultural team in Scrum. They were already using a very agile process. And they have these great stories where they go to a poor farmer with an app and an iPhone built with Scrum, and they show her how she can grow more plants by, you know, treating them better. And they had this great video of a woman farmer standing in a field with her baby saying, you know, in the last 6 months, I doubled the output of my crop. And they showed me on the iPhone that the price in the city for my crop was way higher than I was getting. So I negotiated up a doubling of shillings per bushel. So now I have twice the crop. I get twice as much per bushel. I have 4 times as much money.
And you have one happy person.
And these guys are sent me a photo back saying, thanks, Jeff, for tuning up our idea and giving it back to us in a way that works even better.
That's so great. Well, that's what it's about, right? How can we make society and things better.
Right.
So with your book and everything you're doing with Scrum, what would you say the one takeaway, or what would you want people to
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, Scrum is all about solving the problem of getting things done. You know, people think, you know, I never have enough time. I'm always frazzled, you know. If you organize your work, if you prioritize it, if you do it in small chunks, if you work smart instead of hard, you can get four times as much stuff done, just like that farmer in Uganda.
Anybody can do that if they use a process.
And that means you can have a better life, you can have more money, you can have more time with your kids. You can live a life of abundance instead of always feeling like you never have enough. And so that's my message with Scrum. If you just take and apply these basic principles, you can really tune up your life and have a lot more fun, a lot more energy, and a lot more time to be doing the things you want to be doing.
Well, I think this is a great message. I hope people go out and buy your book and learn about it. Because it's one thing about getting it from your company. It's another thing of, you know, like people get trained in their company. But it's another thing of reading your book and seeing kind of the whole higher level philosophy about it.
Right. I was at a user group meeting recently in Silicon Valley, and I asked, how many people have run their wedding with Scrum? And four people in the room raised their hands. It's useful for almost anything.
And weddings are pretty stressful events. It might be one of those things that people really should use something to get that stress out of the system, out of the process. And that's what this does too. It reduces stress, right?
Right. It puts you on an even keel. You know what you're doing. You're running at a pace. It's like, I used to be a runner, running marathons. You've got to get on your pace. You've got to stabilize that, and you've got to have the focus. And if you do that, you can go a long way at a pretty fast speed. And so with life, it's the same way. You know, we need to focus. We need to prioritize. We need to take things in small chunks. We need to get other people to help us work in teams.
It's life lessons as you know, I coach a lot of sports teams. It's the life lessons.
Yeah.
So Scrum, The Art of Doing Twice the Work in Half the Time by Jeff Sutherland. How do they get their hands on this book?
You can buy it anywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the bookstores have it. You can get it in the Kindle version, electronic editions, hardback, paperback.
So where all fine books are sold.
Yeah, it's now in many different countries. I was just in the Netherlands where the Dutch version was released. So no matter where you are on the planet, you know, you can get a copy of Scrum in a language you can read, and strongly recommend you give it a shot.
Well, I've heard that it's one of the 10 best business books. That's what I'm reading, that it's one of the books from 2014 that you need to read. So
yeah,
that's – you're hoping it gets to one of the all-time best business books, and maybe it's on its way.
Yeah, our editor was the same guy that did Lean Startup, which has been another very successful Agile book. And if we could do as well as Lean Startup, we'd sell, 100,000 copies a year, year after year after year, and our publishers would be tremendously happy.
Well, I'm sure they would be. Well, you know, everybody wants to know how to get more done, right, in the time that they have. And businesses' time is money. So if you can figure out how to get more done in less time, that's going to translate into business profits and stock prices. And that's what everybody wants.
Exactly.
So, well, good. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Jeff. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on the program. It's great talking to you.
Yeah, it was great. I think anything that gets this much attention from all the big companies really should be taken seriously. But, you know, the core of the problem is that so many software development and product development projects fail. And people are just desperate for something that'll help them. And I think Agile and Scrum is something that really can help people. It gets them focused from a business perspective. Of course, there's problems with every process because the people are getting involved and the people mess it up. They might not understand it. And that's what we talked about in the interview, is that majority of the problems is they're just doing a bad Agile process.
And I mean, that's the problem with most of these processes, but I think there's a lot of things that you can learn by understanding the core of these principles and apply it to not just development and, you know, software development or product development, but to all other parts of business. If you want more information on Agile and Scrum or what Jeff Sutherland is into, visit his website at scrumfoundation.com. And for now, have a wonderful day.